Jason.
Joe McHale.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
How are you? Wow, we're saying the same things at the same time.
Wow, I wrote the same book as you.
What?
It says how to use your story to become the best Joe McHale, and I did.
Okay, well then, as long as it came after.
Actually, no, I wrote mine first, but I'll give you
credit. Damn it!
So, how can we use your life story to become the best you? What sort of juicy nuggets in here can be useful for us?
Well, there's a chapter called How to Survive a Chevy Chase Attack. So there's that. It shows you how to start a celebrity feud. And I can't really say the name of the chapter out loud, but it talks about my long-running feud with Robert De Niro. And then there's a chapter called Why I Left Scientology, which I never have left it, and I never was in it. But to be a celebrity, you kind of have to have a good story about leaving religion / cult. So that's how that came together. Yeah, the book is half memoir, because I feel like most celebrities don't have enough to say to fill up an entire book. Their lives are just not that interesting. But half of a book, I figured that was about right. And then why not take that rest of it, because self-help books are very popular. And my name is Joel, just like Joel Osteen. And if you accidentally just see the word Joel and don't read any further, maybe you'll grab my book.
Yeah, I always thought you were a televangelist, yeah.
Thank you. I definitely preach from where the Houston Rockets used to play.
Oh, awesome. What did we learn about sort of you growing up? Because the first couple chapters are like The Beast Awakens and some clever titles like that. But do you remember when you got your first laugh and got, you know, and you're like, ooh, I got
better at that? No, I don't. Doug, I was getting laughs in the womb, dude. No, I mean, the memoir part is, yes, it is, hopefully you'll see that it is a humorous look at my life. The stories in it are definitely true, but I definitely make jokes to the point where I was on stage in Seattle doing a book reading, or doing a kind of Q&A, and the host, not someone in the audience, but the host said, now there's a story about your dad being cheap, which my dad is. But he goes, it says here that when your little brother was born, he didn't really want a third kid, so he put him on the lawn with a sign next to him that said $5,000 or best offer. Now, that is not true, but the person thought it was, that my father would actually try to sell my brother, which, look, my dad is cheap, but he is not a human trafficker. So if you're confused by that story at all, then I apologize. But B, it definitely was a joke.
Well, it'll make sense when you read the book, I'm sure. How did you get into The Soup?
13 years ago, I auditioned for it, and it was one of many auditions. And at that point, it wasn't The Soup. It wasn't anything. It was a pilot presentation for all you folks out there that doesn't know what that is. Usually, the thing called a pilot, which is the first episode of any show, but a pilot presentation is the first 5 minutes of a show.
It's like the pilot of the pilot.
Yeah, it is literally just a sample. It is a wine tasting of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the E saw it because they had success with Talk Soup, and they didn't want it to be called The Soup or Talk Soup. They did not want to bring that show back.
Yeah.
So it was called a completely different name. They saw how cheap it would be to make, which was me and a green screen and like three other people, and went, great, we'll pick it up. And they put us on Friday nights, which at the time was a ghost town on cable. And it slowly built from there because nobody was watching, but it was so cheap that they just left it on, and finally it got an audience. And so it was everyone was like, when did you get your big break? And I was like, it wasn't really a break. It was just a slow cracking of ice over 1,000 years. So that's kind of how that happened. And I was trying I didn't have a real agent at the time. I couldn't get one. And then because of The Soup, I started getting all the auditions that I always had wanted because I could not get my foot in the front door or at the back door or into the window or the doggy door or any other crack in the Hollywood home. What the hell am I talking about? But as soon as that happened, then I started getting the auditions that I wanted, and eventually it led to Community.
Speaking of which, you mentioned that you survived a Chevy Chase attack. Explain what you mean.
Well, that's one of the chapters in the book. I have a fold-out pamphlet, much like it's in your airline seat,
yeah.
In the front seat pocket, a fold-out, and one of those laminated cardboard things that shows you how to survive being attacked by Chevy Chase, who I worked with for 5 years, living legend Chevy Chase. And people like, I get asked about him every time I ever get interviewed. So I thought I would write a chapter on him.
Because you probably grew up loving Caddyshack.
Absolutely.
And Vacation and all that stuff.
Hero.
How did he live up to you, you know, your expectations of comedy legend versus seeing him on set? Was he just as funny behind the scenes, or did he?
He does have a bit of a reputation. And that doesn't mean I don't like the man. I do. I actually am very fond of him. But he is definitely, he's got a very specific way of operating.
Do you miss doing the show? I remember there was like rumors that you might do a movie of it or something.
It will come back as soon as somebody gives us a lot of money or gives Dan Harmon a lot of money. I mean, I think there's a world where a movie gets made. It just has to be funded.
Yeah.
Because I know it's doing very well on, you know, in streaming stuff, but thank God people like the show, and that all came out of Dan Harmon's amazing brain. So I mean, I think there is a world where it happens. I mean, I was just talking to Lauren Graham. Now I'm name dropping. Who ever thought that the Gilmore Girls would get rebooted? Right. And it's a wild hit.
Right.
So who knows? I would love to do it. I think the cast would do it. But now Donald Glover, he's Lando Calrissian, so yeah. He's going to be in London forever.
He's a little busy.
Yeah. As I've gone around the country touring the book, it's amazing how many people love that show, and thank God Dan Harmon cast me on it.
Where do you think it will go to? I'm not asking you to, you know, rank it against the Seinfelds and everything, but
I don't know. I'm going to say 76.
Well, not a specific ranking number, but what unique little corner of the comedy universe?
Dan, I think he liked the world of misfits and people that are kind of broken. Mm-hmm. And I think that said that for whatever reason that spoke to a lot of people out there. And I think that, because what I always get people like, you know, you're doing my friend or you're doing my life. And I'd be like, I'm not. Dan wrote that. I'm not smart enough to write that. And I think the whole show was through the lens of Danny Pudi's character, Abed, who had a hard time understanding kind of the emotional intelligence of other people. And I think Dan wanted to champion that, and that's what people could relate to. And also, Dan's one of the best joke writers you'll ever come across in your life.
I mean, the show's hilarious, so.
Thank you.
What are your memories? I know we're on the clock, but I guess just sort of wrapping up. What are your memories of White House Correspondents' Dinner? The, you know, this president's about to exit office.
I'll never be nervous again. I burned out that fuse. That chip is destroyed. I will no longer be nervous. It was such a nerve-wracking and wonderful evening. It's got to be similar to, I don't know, doing a moonshot or something like that, because it was so strange and wonderful. And I would do it again, but boy, I think it was like getting in shape for a marathon. I pored over my jokes for weeks and weeks, and you know, it's just very weird because you eat dinner with the First Lady for an hour and a half, and sure turns out she's the coolest woman of all time.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Next to my wife and mom. And
good save.
And then all of a sudden you're there for 4 hours, so you don't have any prep time to get ready to perform or something. And then the president goes up, and no matter what your politics are, President Barack Obama is one of the best joke, probably the best joke telling president we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to follow that. So the president opens for you, and he kills. So it's very strange.
Plus, you're just playing to a totally different crowd there. A lot more buttoned.
Well, you're
up.
You look out in the crowd; it's like a wax museum.
Well, now you've opened for Madame Tussauds. And
yes, the wax figures were more responsive. Because you're like, oh, look at all the famous people, including the Dos Equis, the most interesting man in the world.
He made you more nervous than anyone, even more than the president.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, that is the most interesting man in the world.
Awesome. Well, we know you got to run, so we really appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully our listeners will all pick up the copy.
Pick up a copy of the book. It will be the best thing. It'll be the best gift you've ever given someone or to yourself. Just wear a girdle, because you might split a gut open.
Joel McHale, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for the interview.